Welcome to the Oxygen Collective's Fire and Forests Roadshow 2004. I'm Laurel. That was Nathan you just heard, Leslie before him, and you met Becky and Peg so far, and I want to make sure to introduce Forrest, our tech hero who's making this all possible. The rest of our crew will introduce themselves as we go. But we live in the Siskiyou Mountains in southwest Oregon, and we love those wild mountains very much. We love them because they're vast and free and defiant. And those are the ways we feel when we're there. And so it's because of that love when the Bush administration announced their plans for the largest timber sale in the history of the United States. We knew that we needed to do something about it. So Olympia is our second Washington stop on a 3,000-mile West Coast roadshow where we're traveling in our big biodiesel bus. And we're walking on stilts, and we're talking on radio, and we're going to classrooms, and we're driving onto campuses, and we're doing presentations like this, and anything else really that we can think of to call people's attention to this amazing and special place. And we're here because we think we can win. We think we can stop the emperor himself, and we think we can save the wildest place left on the West Coast. And it's a very exciting campaign that's growing. You'll hear more about it in a little bit. But my part of the show tonight, if you'll humor me for a vicarious journey to the Siskiyous, is I'm going to do a little natural history show and tell. And I'm going to pass around some pieces of the representative biodiversity of the Siskiyou Mountains. My hope is that by touching things, by feeling them through these objects, you'll be able to connect a little deeper to this place than if you just were to see some pictures and hear our stories. So these are personal objects, so I'm going to ask everybody to please refrain from any temptation to collect them for yourselves. So I'm going to start by passing around the skull from a fox. This is a gray fox skull. There's two kinds of foxes in the Siskiyou, gray foxes and red foxes. Gray foxes are the more elusive of the two, and they're more forest-dwelling. I found this sitting just like that on the side of a stream in a trailless canyon in the eastern Siskiyou. This is a talon from a peregrine falcon. There's a bowl here in case there's a yuck factor in the crowd. You don't actually have to touch it. But this is a talon from the fastest known creature on Earth. They've been clocked with a radar gun at 217 miles an hour. And they like to nest in steep rocky cliffs, and there's a lot of those in the Siskiyous, so there's a lot of peregrines there. And if you've ever seen one in action, the way they make a living is they fly high in the sky and use their eagle vision to hone in on something like a dove or a quail, duck, something like that. Then they swoop their wings back like that. Pick up speed in a full dive, 100 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour, and then right before they get to the creature they're after, they swing their talons forward, clench their fists, and smack it in the air like that. And usually they kill it on contact. And the times I've seen them do it, they've caught it in the air and flown up and ripped it apart. So that probably happened once or twice in the life of this critter here. These are all cones from a sugar pine. Sugar pines are the largest species of pine in the world. Well, there's a lot of them in the Siskiyous. They're especially ones that that survive fire. And the Native Americans used to burn them on purpose, along with many other kinds of plants, to stimulate the growth of the sap that they're named for, and they used it as a sweetener. But I have three stages. They look different. These are all from different life cycles in the cone of a sugar pine. This one is an immature cone that fell off the tree before it had released its seeds. This is a mature monster of a cone from a sugar pine that fell to the forest floor before I picked it up. And this is the spent core left behind. It passed through the paws of a western gray squirrel, and you've probably seen them. They hold it in their hands like a corn cob and like that and let go of the seeds. So this, I know you're all mesmerized, in fact, is a burnt stick. There's a lot of these in the Siskiyou right now. But the reason I wanted to show this is because I wonder how often folks have thought about what it is that's being revealed when you see a stick turned black, right? Because it's carbon that's revealed after a fire. So if you think about the life of a tree and the way that it grows, right, it pulls up water through its roots and it pulls up nutrients through its roots. But the mass of its flesh, the body itself of the tree, the carbon, is breathed in from the sky, like through its needles. And they, of course, take in the carbon dioxide, split it down the middle, let go of the oxygen, which is what we breathe, and that carbon is what they hold on to. So also what's in there besides carbon is all those nutrients that came out of the soil. So after a fire, the base nutrient material that regrows a new forest, much of it is released from the old forest. So if they come in with their helicopters and their bulldozers and try to heal the post-burn forest, they, of course, remove that base nutrients the forest needs. But the other thing, I'm passing it around with a glove because you will get dirty, but what I want you to notice is see it's breaking apart. Well, that's very significant, and this is why we have such a massive, decisive potential for victory on our hands with this campaign, is because all the trees that are in the forest in the Siskiyou are doing the same thing that this stick is. They're decaying. So the commercial value of the standing timber out there is plummeting. And so you have a situation where if we can keep them out this summer, they won't come back. We'll see if the commercial value plummets, we'll see how much their commitment to forest restoration remains next season. I don't think it will. And so that's part of the reason. It's very significant, that fact that those trees are decaying quickly and they have to get to them this year, if at all. Here is a number of things. Mostly these are butterflies. I didn't kill them to put them on display. Found them mostly like this. But there's a checker spot and a swallowtail and a monarch and a fritillary and a blue and a painted lady and a few others. Also in here is a rattle from a rattlesnake and a piece of bark from an old-growth ponderosa pine that's been used for many years by black bears to scratch and sharpen their claws. So you can actually see the indentations left over after the black bears sharpen their claws on there. There's extraordinary diversity of butterflies in the Siskiyous because the flowers are so diverse. So these stones are both from the Siskiyou, and if you're interested in understanding something about the ecology of the Siskiyou Mountains, it's totally crucial that you know something about serpentine. And even though this one's red and this one's green and they feel and look very different, these are both from a class of stones called serpentine. It's a rare kind of rock that you only find on continental margins, places where you've had an oceanic plate subduct underneath a continental plate and get pushed up to make mountains. And it's because this is like subcrustal material. It's from the underside of an oceanic plate. And there's many interesting things about serpentine, but for the Siskiyous, see, they're full of all sorts of heavy metals. There's nickel and chromium and other kinds of toxic substances in this rock. So the soil and the mountains that they're made out of excludes most plants from being able to live there. And that's why, you know, if you're from Olympia and you're used to this lush green kind of rainforest sort of atmosphere, some of the pictures that you've seen of the Siskiyous might be at odds with what you think of as Western Oregon, because the serpentine creates, in many cases, a very barren, sometimes even desert-looking landscape. But I can promise you, if you go and walk out among it, it's tremendously diverse, but at a distance, it's not what you are used to from around here. So, and you can see it. The reason why there's so many endemic plants that grow nowhere else in the world has a lot to do with these serpentine stones. These, it's funny, I heard people talking about madronas earlier today. These are from that tree. We call them madrones, which is an interesting, almost cultural difference. But if you know madrones, you probably know them as one of the sexiest trees in the forest. But besides that, they're always doing something interesting. In the spring, they've got super fragrant flowers. In the summer, they peel back that orange bark and reveal their green skin. And then in the fall, of course, they make these juicy berries that are very sweet to eat. But they're also the first thing to come back after fire. And it's been, you know, the Biscuit Fire was in the summer of 2002, and now you can see madrone sprouts out there that are taller than us when we're on our stilts, 10 feet, 12 feet high already. It's incredible to see. And that's something that, if you haven't been in a post-burn landscape, pictures can't do it. You have to go there to experience it yourself. It's a luscious kind of landscape. It's green and vibrant and just looks, you can just feel it. It feels healthy. It does not feel like it needs a bush administration to do any healing at all. Now, with these, I understand you do have to hold them up close to make much of an impression. But in this vial are tail feathers from a rufous hummingbird. And rufous hummingbirds are probably just now arriving up here, I would imagine. But they have a way, they found a lifestyle where they can follow spring for like 9 months out of the year. And the way they do it is they start in the dead of winter down on like near border of Mexico. And then as the spring blooms start their way up the coast, the hummingbirds follow that bloom. And then they get all the way up here towards the border of Canada. And then when the spring wildflowers are fading, they hop up to the high country and follow the spine of the Sierra and the Rockies down south. And by doing that, they can find blooming wildflowers into September, sometimes later. So that's the way that they make a living. And then in here with the bowl with it is a wing from an American goldfinch. These are another set of talons. These are from a western screech owl. It's a little cryptic forest owl that you probably haven't seen. Most people haven't because they're so elusive and nocturnal. But you may have heard it. They're the ones that have a call from the forest at night like a bouncing ball. It's like a whoo, 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 like that. These last two things I'm going to pass around are both antlers, clearly. This is from a mature buck, deer, who let these go in the Siskiyou Mountains. And this is, of course, from an elk. And if you haven't had a chance to hold on to a set of elk antlers before, it's really something. You don't have to be shy with it. You can hold it and see as strong as you can. Try and bend it. It's amazing. And try to imagine carrying two of these on your head is a pretty incredible thing. But this was found, actually, in a burn in central Oregon that they tried to log after it burned. And it was a place that was defended, Warner Creek, that the trees are still standing there because people stood up and said, no, we're not going to allow that to happen. But you'll hear more about that one later. So while those are going around, I'm going to tell you a little bit about our story of how we got here. We live in the Siskiyou Mountains. We lived there when the Biscuit Fire happened. And it's true that it was intense. Every morning we would wake up with smoke in your lungs, and the sky was orange for months on end, and it was a visceral daily experience to be in the presence of these massive wildfires. But as I said, we're still there now. We can see how gorgeous this landscape is and how healthy the rejuvenation process is. But we had our own experience with fire. The Biscuit was just one of dozens of fires that burned that summer. Another one, called the Squire Fire, burned behind the farm where many of us lived. And we fought it with our hands, and then with our neighbors, and then with helicopters and bulldozers, and they came and created a war zone around us to try to stop this fire. So it was always important to us. But it happened to be that that was the spot that Bush himself chose to come and announce his Healthy Forest Initiative. And he brought with him three governors, Ann Veneman, Gail Norton, the two of his cabinet members, head of Department of Interior and Department of Agriculture. And they announced his new vision for healthy forests. And if you haven't heard much about it, kind of in a nutshell, it basically comes down to, if a forest hasn't burned, then it needs to be logged. And if a forest burns, then, well, it needs to be logged. It's a common sense kind of proposal. Everybody can get their mind around that one. But we did what we could at the time. We met the motorcade on a dirt road with a John Deere tractor, and we shook our fists and waved our banners, but it wasn't satisfying enough. And so that's why we are traveling now, rallying people to this cause, letting people know about this totally bogus project, because the language that they're using and the terms that they're utilizing could almost sound reasonable if you didn't know better. And I doubt that's real common in this crowd here, that people don't know better. But we really want to call attention to the fact that these burned forests are vital and healthy, and that this project is totally heinous. So, but please don't take my word for it. Come on down to the Siskiyou this summer. I can pretty much guarantee you'll be happy that you did. Thanks.